Hey, everybody, I'm Jody Vance.
And I'm George Affleck.
And coming up on Unspun, we have so much to cover, George. We have UBCM, we have independents popping up all over the place, new polling, plus we've got national and international news to take the spin out of.
Let's get into it. UBCM, Jody. I love UBCM because you know what happens at UBCM? Party.
That, is this when Amanda always tells you to move the wine glass out of the shot?
All photos, you do that when you're a politician. No. The after parties and then the after parties. There's all the daytime stuff, which is, you know, whatever. But man, there are so many, you know, lobbyists, organizations, nonprofits, big, you know, QP has a huge party. I think Wednesday nights, they had this massive party, all you can eat, all you can drink. If you know, and you don't know where, you're only the politicians find out where you're going. Because if you're just there as a vendor or you're somebody else, you don't, it's really hard to get into these parties. So there's a lot of,
it's all about who you know. If you know.
Exactly. You know, right? Yeah. They if want you know, the politicians you know. There.
So, well, yeah, of course they do. And the premier was speaking today, which is Thursday. And, you know, the questioning was around, I actually spoke with the head of the UBCM about what their platform was. And it was really about just the stress of the lack of affordability, right? Like, it's pretty straightforward. It's harm, it's housing, and it's inflation. It's the cost of living, the kitchen table stuff, right? But asking for action from the government. And I got to ask you first off here, because you go to these every year. Is it unusual for the UBCM to be this close to an election?
No, because it was last time. It's always in September, and the last election was the same time in October. So and I was at that UBCM, and then I was running for office that time. So I remember it was all very tight. But that was the first time, because before that, the elections were in May. And so that flip to October definitely brings it tight. It also makes it kind of redundant. I mean, you're in there for literally days before the writs dropped. Right. So these politicians you're meeting with are kind of like, what's the point? Are you even going to be there in 4 weeks? Like, I don't know. So,
and how much of a move can we make at this point? Mind you, policy is sometimes made on an elevator ride, but
yeah, well, you know, and of course, UBCM is the Union of BC Municipalities. It's all the people from the local governments. And usually they hook up and they meet with the provincial government reps. Now, what's interesting is Gordon Campbell loved UBCM, and he was former chair of UBCM. He was very, very committed to UBCM. And he always, and this is why he was so successful, because he would go to UBCM, and I used to do the PR for UBCM a long time ago before I got into politics. He would come, and on that final day, he would just hand out the goodies to the places where he needed to get to have influence so that his team would win in those ridings. So he used it as a very good tool or weapon, depending on how you look at strategy, to get to the people that, you know, because people vote locally. You may think, oh, it's provincial government, but people at the end of the day make their decisions at a local level. And those swing ridings are key. And we'll see that certainly in this coming election as a really important thing. So it's quite an important event. But, you know, the people who came after, Christy Clark didn't use it that way. It seems like EB might be doing something on Friday, announcing some stuff. We'll find out what that is, but he may be taking advantage of it, especially given the tightness to the election.
Well, there was an announcement yesterday by the BCNDP with regard to healthcare, which is also a big part of everybody's kitchen table concerns at the moment. I mean, trying to get a doctor, going to the ER, on a wait schedule to get, you know, surgeries done or cancer treatment, like, it's just ERs closing throughout, the interior of British Columbia. That's become normalized. So the announcement yesterday was a nurse to patient ratio, a definitive nurse to patient ratio. And it was interesting from my perspective, of course, there should be a 4-to-1 nurse to patient ratio on all wards. And then, you know, 2-to-1 in more intense care, and then in full on ICU, it's a 1-to-1. Like, all of that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
We have a shortage of nurses. Yeah. Nurses are retiring. Nurses are burnt out. The whole point is now, what is there, extra stress that's going to be on booking your healthcare workers, your frontline healthcare workers? It was interesting that the nurses union's president was in attendance and seemed to like the idea, but I guess it's kind of like the time of year or the time in the cycle that you would plant your flag in the ground and say, you said this on this day.
Yeah.
That you can,
yeah.
you know,
yes.
That kind of feels like where we're at.
100%. And, you know, it's interesting, healthcare. It's tough for me to admit this, but, you know, the NDP, given that we had COVID and over the last, kind of was hard for Adrian Dix to really pay attention to much else than dealing with COVID over a certain number of years there. So you can see why. And this problem is happening everywhere. Interestingly, I have a client that's in the healthcare sector that's a school for teaching people how to work in the healthcare system. They are overwhelmed with applications to get into this program. They can't keep up. And believe we're my job is to bring them in students. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's good. High five. But also, don't fire me because you've got too much students, because my job is to get more students. But it's interesting because it shows you, first of all, there's a lot of people, you know, unemployment rate is at what, 6%? We've got massive immigration to Canada. We've got people who want to work in the healthcare sector. Clearly, this school is a micro example.
Right.
But it's, they can't, they're a private sector school. They can't simply magically create these courses and find teachers. It's not that easy. So you have this dilemma where education, like, how do we, if we want more nurses, where do they come from? And by the way, two of my sisters are nurses, and my sister is 1 year older than me, retired last year, psych nurse. She was just like, I'm done. I can't
exhausted.
Do this anymore. I'm just, I got through COVID. I had to work at a, you know, on Zoom with my clients. It was painful and hard. And then they wanted me to continue potentially on Zoom. And I'm like, no way.
You've got people yelling at you in the streets.
Yeah. I mean, it's just,
you're walking to work in your scrubs, and instead of saying thank you, people are like, you're the worst.
She was in Surrey for years.
Okay. Yeah.
So she had,
my mom was a lab tech, and I remember when mom retired, she's like, you know, I've done it. I've done what I can. It's my time. But it's that boom bust and echo, right? That boomer generation, the oldest boomers are now at retirement age. So, I mean, and I saw a stat actually yesterday, it was on Global News that, I'm sure it was everywhere, but when I was watching the announcement, I've got my air quotes up, the re-announcement really of the patient to nurse ratio, is that over the last 2 years, 14,000 nurses have been hired, but they didn't have the stat of how many had retired or left the industry.
There's a lot.
So we'll keep our eye on that.
Yeah.
Interesting. I want to get into, first of all, BC United, now former BC Liberal Party, now Independence.
And maybe new Liberal Party, who knows?
I know. Like, can you just take us on a journey, George? I'm going to put my feet up here right now while you explain what the hell's going on.
You and I talk about this all the time. The mushy middle, the centrists, the federal liberals, where are they going to land? I think a lot of these candidates are living in ridings and are either elected by the BC United. They're centrists. They are saying, hold on, I'm pretty sure in my riding that people don't want to vote NDP and they don't want to vote conservative. And so if they have a high enough profile, and some of them absolutely do, others I'm like, I don't think, you know, party politics have a very high, you know, people vote by party at first. But if you have a profile and people really trust you, then you have a chance. But I would say maybe two or three of these independents will win. It's a big deal, though. And they could hold the balance of power. My prediction, I think we've talked about it, I think the NDP will still get a minority government. I just think that's what's going to happen. I think Vancouver, all these places are going to go NDP, unless there's an independent running and splits the vote. And then, you know, who knows what could happen. But most of those federal liberals will go to the NDP. I think they're not going to go conservative. And that's a lot of votes.
Right. There was no huge rush to the conservative side when Kevin Falcon decided to step out. Like,
no,
it was barely
there. In fact, the opposite. Like, you have some polling data, right? It's not happening.
The polling data shows that the NDP is still, 44-42? That's the most recent. I mean, it's fluid, right? But we're getting down to the short strokes. Before Kevin Falcon stepped out, it was basically the same. And the thought process is that 13% or 12 or whatever it ended up being when he was like, maybe I'll make a deal with my enemy. seriously, that's what it was. Everybody's like, there's no way these two men hate each other. It will never happen. Oh, wait, it did. And then people, the mushy middle, found themselves going, I'm a little pissed off at this BCNDP party that has been in power for this long, which you often say, it doesn't matter who you are, once you've been in power long enough, typically it swings. Yeah. And the confusion over the BC Conservatives being Pierre Poilievre Conservatives, they're not. It's a completely different party, but they're mm-hmm. definitely, you know, rock skipping off the, it's a carbon tax election, which David Eby took a lot of the teeth out of by saying, you know, maybe we will get rid of the consumer carbon tax, which was like, wah, wah. It's like, oh God, go back, fix the attack ads, fix them.
What was that, like, weather vane really, ad?
Oh my, the weather, tell that story for those who haven't seen it. We're such policy wonks.
That was in 2013 when the BC Liberals with Christy Clark and Adrian Dix was the leader of the NDP, and he flip-flopped on, oil and gas on the Northern Pipeline, or, you know, the, and he just flip-flopped on it. And so they made this really effective ad of a weather vane, you know, and, you know, do you want these people in charge, just, you know, flip-flopping like this? Voters don't like flip-floppers. They really don't. They don't like people who can't make up their mind. I vote you in to make your decisions for me. And if I can't trust you, and you're gonna go back on your word and flip flop on something that, to me, carbon tax. I mean, you know, really, NDP has that balance. The NDP has to always have with the environmentalists and the union. It's a very tough balance they have to always have, and they don't want to lose either one of them. But this is pushing those. I just don't understand why the Green Party is not capitalizing on the way they should.
There are about three things that I want to unpack with what you just said. The flip-flopping nature happens versus even 5 years ago, 7 years ago. Yep. The reaction on social media and the power of a handful of voices can really influence a flock of seagulls, or I hesitate to say you know how birds like, oh, we're flying this way. Oh, no, let's fly, change course. There might be a storm there. I don't want to call it sheep. It's not like they're blindly following, mm-hmm. but there are people who are like, oh, you know what? I want to save the environment, so I'm going to go. If you can get that wedge issue, you can turn the tide in a different way in 2024 than ever before because of online activity and the engagement of people, of a few. Because
don't we all have friends that is kind of like, okay, if this person say, you know, they're not really following much, but they'll say something, I heard, and you're like, whoa, wow. Okay.
I do. I definitely have that friend, and I love
her.
Think,
and that person represents a big chunk of the population.
Right. Yeah. I wish they'd find Unspun Podcast, because we talk about this stuff all the time. I want to talk a little bit it was kind of attached to the UBCM, because we were talking about harm reduction, mm-hmm. housing, and these are the things that people are talking about, and they're going to be going to their MLAs or their candidates and saying, how are you going to help me? You know, my stepdaughter right now, you've told me about your kids looking for a place to live. I'm stunned at the cost of a rental, really anywhere. And we've talked about it until you're actually walking through these places and going, this bedroom in this crappy place is $1,000 a month. Like, wow. Just the bedroom.
I know. It's brutal. And, you know, one of my kids has moved to England because it's cheaper. And wow. I know so many, I've lost out. I know so many people who've moved to Calgary, right?
Just like, and so much so that Calgary needs new infrastructure across the board. They are struggling to maintain the influx of people.
Yeah.
That ad campaign brought in. But let's go to, like, do you think Airbnb's... Works, everybody.
Advertising works. Advertising works. Communications.com.
So when we're talking about moving the meter on housing, you've been at the municipal level, you've fought at the provincial level to get on the ballot and be a part of it. Do you think, you know, restrictions on Airbnb, the stats we're seeing today that show... No. That's starting to press rents down. What will impact rents?
I think if you live in the Okanagan, you go to the where it has impacted everything in such a negative way. Most of those houses are just sitting empty. They're not renting those places. They're just trying to sell them now to get them. These people who, I'm not going to pay this, and I can't afford it. So, but nobody wants to buy them. So that's helping. Certainly housing prices in the Okanagan. If you want to buy a house right now in, you know, Summerland, go for it. It's a great time to buy.
Right.
I just think it's so incremental, that number. I think what's happening is You know, the stuff's coming online is already being built. All the rental housing, Vancouver, for now, since I was there, now it's been 14 years. We've been building the, you know, the various names of it, Stir, Rental 100, now it's called whatever, SERP or whatever it's called now. You know, building incentives of developers to build all these rental housing. This is a lot of housing. You just go down Broadway, you go down any city, and now they're building in Burnaby. There's so much rental housing being built. That's why I've told the story right across the street from me. This is a few, 10 years, 8 years ago. Three rental housing, you know, like these kind of developments opened up on Richard Street, right across the street.
Right across the street from you.
And guess what happened? The price of rent went down 10%.
Wow.
In that 1 6-month period when all those places came online. Volume, it's a volume game. And sure, yeah, okay. But it's really about building. It's still about, and we're building a lot of rental housing right now. A lot.
Good. Yep. I see it all around as I'm driving around downtown and in the, you know, West Side, Kitsilano, starting to see the cranes go up, right? There was a time, I thought about this the other day, because it was 1996 when Vancouver Television launched. I'll never forget, like, Steve Pratt and James Duthie were our entertainment reporters, and they did a really hilarious story about the Christmas lights on the cranes. Remember when you used to drive downtown and it was just a sea of cranes, right? And then they disappeared. And then they all went to Burnaby and Richmond, right? And then you look in Burnaby and Richmond, it's like, whoa, wow. Yeah. And now you turn around, you look, and it's not as many as it's been, but it's something. Like, I just feel like, please keep building the things, and the NIMBYs need to stop talking. I'm on a couple of Facebook groups, I know, old people Facebook groups, but I'm in them so I can just see what they're saying, and there are some people that you just are like, guys,
I'm having beers with Bill Tilman at 5 o'clock. I'll ask him
how
team's going, because I think it's back with Caldy and Hardwick, the anti-development team there. You know, they just don't want anything built. They want to think, you
it's
know,
what? Oh, like, enough. I appreciate those people. Like, I appreciate hardworking, putting yourself out there, getting, I'm never going into politics. Like, it'll just never happen. I have lots of opinions.
As much
and
as
I
you get
talk
asked. As many times as you get
I
asked.
I get 100 times out of 100, sure I will not do it. I do, but I will not do it. But I wonder, because I like Colleen Hardwick. I very much respect Bill Tilman. You know that. I love talking with these people. But I fundamentally disagree when it's like, build nothing. It must stay the same. It wasn't the same. When you start talking about what it used to be like here, it's like, ask somebody whose generations of families lived here. And asked what that used to look like. It's just ridiculous to consider that it must stay the same. It's going to be static because I bought here. It's like, come on.
And you know, I know there's certain pockets where towers don't make any sense, for sure.
We've had
those conversations. But mostly Broadway, certainly Central Broadway, and certainly in the healthcare district, there's nothing to block views there. There's not. It's like, okay, sure, Queen Elizabeth Park, but we've got the view cones and all that stuff. It's if not there, where? If there's nowhere, where are we going to build
it? You've won me over on that argument, George. I have to say, as the mushy middle, when you talk about the main thoroughfares and Broadway is going to be what it should be. I mean, it's the most dense population of businesses and should be, and it's hospitals and it's everything.
The amount of
why wouldn't we? And you look at Broadway and Granville, that huge building at Broadway and Granville. When I saw it on paper, we argued about it. I was like, why does it need to be that tall? And you're like, it doesn't cost more to go up, right? And I was like, no, I don't like it. I don't ear. And I've come around to it. No, I have. Where I have, and even the new build down at where is it? It's Broadway and Alma. That big blocky building. I thought that's going to like wipe out the area where True Confections used to be.
Oh, down
and
the
it's
end
like, kind of looks like an Inukshuk. It's actually, I thought, oh, that's such an ugly building. It's going to be terrible. And now it's almost done. And I'm like, that's actually pretty cool. I mean,
and there's a Safeway
would I want to live in the
there,
place right next door to that? Probably not. Probably not.
But people like me do. I live in a tower area downtown, surrounded by towers.
I was just about to say that. Sell it to somebody who will, because I tell you, somebody's going to love to live there for all the other amenities, for all the other reasons. And there's going to be an injection of people into the neighborhood in Kitsilano from, let's say, Arbutus to Alma. It used to be what it looks like from Broadway to 25th on Main. If you go to Main Street, where it's been building, 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 right?
Right up my door.
Right over there. It's amazing. Over on the other side of town, it used to be thriving like that. It used to be young people and families and people accepting one another and different differences and whatnot, and just a melting pot of humanity that really was delicious at the restaurants. I'm just going to say, as my immigrant family would take me out for dinners or, you know, when we were lucky enough to go, we're missing that. Like when you're trying to protect your neighborhood from the other, like just stop.
Here's my morning on Saturday morning. I will try to sleep in a little bit. I usually get up at 4:35 in the morning. Ooh. And so on Saturdays, I try to, you know, sleep in. That's and nice. In the summer, the windows are open. And, you know, we face right out on Richard Street, and there's a farm to table across the street, and they start pulling out there all their fruit racks and stuff. And the sound of people just running by, and then there's people with their luggage kind of going to the airport, and there's a coffee shop right across the street, and you sort of hear people. Some people bring their dogs, they bark. That's kind of annoying. But to me, that's what I love about living in a downtown area, that sound of the city coming to life. But that's not for everybody, but I like it. I like those sounds. It makes me feel like I'm somewhere. So
I live across the street from an elementary school. When people are like, those children in the next door neighbor's yard, it's like,
we have
all of your children in my yard.
Yes, right.
And I love it. It reminds me that there's more out there. Even you can probably tell that I've got a bit of a cold. I'm like sniffling away and using Kleenex here. I'm work from home, people. But hearing the world move about us is what it means to live in a city. And if you want peace and quiet in your meadow, don't live in Kitts Point. Right? It's time for you to move out of Kitts Point. It's not what it once was because it's downtown now.
It has been. It's been such a pocket that's been controlled by multiple politicians over the years.
Right.
Live there.
Oh, every time I walk by Gregor Robertson's old street with the little parkette that's got its own watering system and a bike lane and two bike lights, I'm like, oh my God. I'm just like, please, how much did you make up your house?
He did recuse himself from the debate.
Sure. Oh, we got to keep talking. Sorry.
Where are we with time? I don't even know where we are.
We have 10 minutes left. Just under 10 minutes left. Trudeau shuffle. Okay, so.
Yes.
Okay, Pierre Poilievre is going to try and have a confidence vote next week. It looks like it's going to fail. Bloc Québécois have said, like, we're not going to pull the pin on the Liberals. And the shuffle. So what's your read on this? You're better at this stuff than I am.
I mean, first of all, there's the by-elections that happened in Quebec. And so the by-election in Quebec was no surprise. Bloc won, although it's a very strong Liberati. The by-election in Winnipeg went to the NDP, or to the NDP. Everybody thought the Conservative was going to win. That was weird. And I think that was a campaign that there were some inside stories I heard about. They put a person in there, the party did, that they wanted in there to be in. And, you know, the local person got the boot, and that created for the Conservatives. So that kind of game
would be unpopular.
And so that's a guy, you know, who knows? So Trudeau is surrounded by yes men right now, yes people, and he is living in some kind of bubble of whatever. So his cabinet shuffle is it proves that this guy is not going anywhere. I'm shocked, but I still think he'll be pushed out. His caucus will start, you know, pushed against him, and I still think you'll see a potential leadership
change.
But I think if there is that, you know, it's kind of like now that the NDP are out of their deal, that it's the exact same thing happened to his dad, right? You know, he had to come back to run because he had a minority government. You know, it's just it's like he's reliving his dad's life. Nobody, believe me,
wild.
My dad died.
Do you
want
to point out that
relive that life?
I do want to point out that one of the other reasons why that by-election might have gone NDP is because of the, again, it could be confusion, but Wab Kanoo is incredibly popular in Manitoba. People are way more politically engaged because of this leader, and they are paying greater attention. And perhaps there was a whole slew of people that nobody expected would come out to vote. And they maybe went, oh, NDP. Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
And a lot of young people in that province too, that
very much so.
Alberta. I think it'd be interesting to see one thing back to that. Well, first of all, those young people moving to Alberta is going to shift that move, I think, to the left. But interesting, the polling that comes out in BC shows that young people are conservative. I'm like, what?
Well, they're pissed off at the current government. I'm even seeing that with some of the young people, because, you know, I have the house that becomes the hub. So they're believing some of the hype because they're only seeing certain things. They don't watch traditional TV. They don't listen to radio. So those who are making a point that is hitting their feed, whether it's on TikTok or Instagram or what
Unspun,
have you.
You know, Unspun. I'm sure they're listening to us.
It's definitely Unspun podcast, but they've got opinions that are based on world events or their perception of what is missing. If they're riding the bus and they're going through the downtown east side, and whoever's in government is responsible for this because they only know what's right in front of them, which I was one of those people as a teenager.
Of course.
I was 100% one of those people. It's just I was less likely to vote after my 18th birthday. Like, boom, I'm going to vote. Where there is motivation now. The best.
We'll see.
I'm just saying around my table. I'm not saying just around my table. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys are all turning 18. Oh, they're like, I can't wait to vote. I'm like, okay.
That's cool. Yay.
The kids are all right, man. The kids are all right. Okay, let's go. We've got
two song references today. Nice.
Boom. I wonder if McLean K still watches because we can get you to sing.
If only we had a DJ that could be spinning for us while we're doing these things.
I mean, let's go south of the border. What is your take on we're eating the dogs and the cats, we're eating the pets?
Oh, I love the TikToks, you know. We're eating the dogs.
Right to the peanuts. It's the, oh my God.
It's, you know, is it the Fonzie moment, jumping the shark here? I don't know. It's just like, we've talked about the debate that his base
we
is
did.
Crazy.
But it's still, it's amplifying. I mean, they got bomb threats at elementary schools in Springfield, Ohio.
I know. You know? And then
Donald
course,
Trump saying that
they're
saying the Haitians have to go back to Venezuela. Oh, look at that. I just got another email from Donald Trump. I get about 6 or 7 of these a day. I never signed up for them. I've tried to unsubscribe.
And then I get those from the Democrats on my little fake, you know, the junkie email that I use. And it's not public in any capacity, that this email address. It's a Gmail address. I don't know how they would have ever found it. I've never used it in any capacity. And yet I'm getting all this junk from Democrats and Republicans. And I'm like, I'm in Canada and it's a Gmail address I've never put in any public setting. It's somebody sold a list.
Yeah,
they did.
That's right.
Google. I mean, did they sell it? Maybe. Who knows?
What's your take on the hack that has happened in the U.S.? Iran apparently hacked into Donald Trump's campaign emails and then sent them all to the Democrats. Interestingly, though, the Democrats not taking it to the media because they're like, that's what they want. That's what the foreign adversaries want.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of reminds me of the Veep episode, actually. But given what happened with the pagers in Israel, it's like,
and then the walkie-talkies.
I guess anything is possible. I don't know anymore. Like, watch, your phone's going to blow up now. Like, what is going on?
Not a James Bond villain move right there?
And did you, I mean, I was watching those videos. It was crazy, crazy. What a massive attack in a mad way. It's like, wow.
And looking, if you don't know what we're talking about, apparently the Israeli government found a way to not just get a company to do this, but create a company to build these devices, these pagers and walkie-talkies that Hezbollah was purchased and distributed to their members so that they could communicate with one another when carrying out plots, right?
Yep.
And now they're identifying, like, there's somebody in parliament with a walkie-talkie that just blew up. There's a like, just how far reaching this, and the Israelis
basically are literally tagged by a massive wound on your crotch. I mean, it's
thousands of people
died,
injured. Yeah.
It's not just where you want your pager to blow up, believe me. No doubt.
Incredible. What we're watching in real time is truly incredible. And but the polls, we can end on a bit of a happy note here. We've got 2 minutes to go. Depending on your political leaning, I guess, is a happy note, is the fact that there is some significant optimism that the rhetoric that we're seeing with the wish for the right to return to power is slipping away in the polls, if the polls are accurate. Even in the ones that are most conservative, they're saying that with the most recent, you know, amplification of racist rhetoric by the former president and his running mate, who has a very unfortunate name. It's really bothering me.
What? Oh, you're, oh, yeah. You're
oh, yeah.
With them. What? Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, but then he's like, well, we have to, you know, create these stories so that the media will pay attention. It's like, you're creating stories that are putting, oh, you know, that legal migrants in the crosshairs of supremacists. Like, come on. There's a better way to fight.
You got to get this straight. you're admitting to just making. What about your thing about fake news and your party's fake news BS? Like, so you're admitting to making fake news. Is that what you're saying? Like, I don't get this. It's crazy. I'll gonna stick to our good friend Alan Lichtman's predictions. That's what I'm gonna stick to. That the numbers don't, the polls don't matter, but that he thinks Kamala Harris is gonna win. I'll stick with Al.
All right, there you go. You have it from the guy that you love to follow or you hate to follow on social media because he's so opinionated. I love him. I'm here every Thursday with him on Unspun Podcast. Your handle is at George
underscore.
Underscore. I am at Jody Vance. That's Jody with a Y. Just be nice on there. And can I make just a little bit of a social media statement here, George? I got a couple of the right wing freedom screamers coming at me about how I block people.
Oh, yeah.
I do. I do. I block assholes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do.
As you should.
And that's, you know what that is? My freedom and my right.
That's right.
It's so funny.
I mute them, which I think drives me even more crazy because they don't understand why I'm not responding.
Well, for me, I outright block them because I don't want them jumping off because they'll quote tweet me and use my reach. And I'm like, mm-mm.
Yeah.
No, thank you. Bloxy, bloxy. Yeah, there are some you can't write my name down.
Nasty people out there for sure. Be nicer, people. Come on. You can be opinionated like we are. And still, well, maybe not always nice. We're not always nice. Maybe I've been a bit of a jerk.
I'm not always nice. I ripped your face off the other day. I did. And then we got along still. Wasn't even a blip.
I was abused by vision for 7 years. I can take anything.
You can take it. I've had mine too. I won't name names though. You guys can guess. All right. That's it.
We'll see you later. Bye, everybody.